Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Dr. Chagpar welcomes Drs. Dan DeMayo and Linda Nicolai. Dr. DeMayo is Waldemar von Zedwitz Professor of Genetics and Professor of Molecular Biophysics and Biochemistry and of Therapeutic Radiology. He's also Scientific Director and Deputy Director of Yale Cancer Center. Dr. Nicolai is Associate Professor of Epidemiology and Microbial Diseases and Director of the HPV Impact Project in the Emerging Infections Program. Here's Anish Chagpar.
So why don't we start off by telling us a little bit about what both of you do and start off the conversation about cancer and vaccines and viruses.
Sure. So I'm an epidemiologist, and I've been doing public health research for about 10 years now here in Connecticut, most of my time at Yale. And my work has really focused on infectious diseases, and in particular, infections that are sexually transmitted. So I was very excited in around 2007 when a new vaccine for human papillomavirus, which is a very common sexually transmitted infection, became licensed and available in the U.S. So this was a very exciting time because we now have a vaccine that is very effective at preventing an infection that we know causes several different types of cancer. So the potential for prevention is really tremendous. So for about the past 5 years or so, I've been focusing my work on how best can we achieve that potential.
So, Dan, tell us a little bit about what you do, particularly as a virologist and also as deputy director of the Cancer Center. When most people think about cancer, they think about genomics, they think about genetic abnormalities. They don't often think about cancer being associated with viruses.
Sure. So I have been studying viruses and cancer for about 30 years and became very excited with the prospect that we could understand cancers because viruses are simple. And in animals, it's been known for over 100 years that viruses can cause cancer. And in the last 30 years or so, we've really understood that viruses cause cancer in people. And now we recognize that about 15% of all cancers in the world are caused by viruses. And what's exciting is that we have approaches to handle viruses to prevent infection by vaccination, by other public health measures. And so these are 15% of all cancers we could eliminate by these sorts of strategies. This is a very exciting time.
So let's start the conversation there. I mean, I think that, you know, to think that cancer is potentially preventable and that we can vaccinate people against cancer is really exciting. Is this just a particular type of cancer, or is it a very broad spectrum of cancers, or is it more narrow? What kinds of cancers are we talking about, and what kinds of viruses cause these kinds of cancers?
Some of the cancers are quite common. So hepatitis virus, for example, several types of hepatitis virus cause liver cancer. About 80% of all liver cancer is caused by virus infection, ultimately. Cervical cancer, cancer of the uterine cervix, 100% is caused by human papillomavirus infection. But there are a number of other types of cancer, some lymphomas, some forms of Hodgkin's disease, some other types of nasopharyngeal cancer, and some head and neck cancers that are caused also by viruses. So it's a very specific set of viruses and a specific set of cancers.
So, Linda, you had started talking about human papillomavirus as a sexually transmitted disease. And I think that many of us understand viruses and sexually transmitted diseases. So are these viruses the ones that cause cervical cancer, or do they also cause other kinds of cancer? And can we really vaccinate and prevent these cancers?
Yes. Yeah, so there are actually lots of different types of HPV. There are over about 150 different types of the virus, and these different types of virus cause different types of disease. So, for example, some types of HPV cause warts on the hands and feet, and other types of these viruses cause warts in the genital area. And other types still cause infections of the upper reproductive tract, so like the cervix. And those are the infections that can go on to produce cervical cancer. The interesting, so the cervical HPV infections are very, very common. Millions of people have these infections at any point in time in the U.S., but it's important to realize that most of these infections do not go on and develop cervical cancer. There's good screening with the Pap smear test that can detect early precancerous lesions. So even though these infections are very, very common, they don't often go on and produce cervical cancer if women receive proper screening.
So women should get screened with a Pap smear to see if they have got early signs of precancerous lesions. But I find the whole concept of viruses causing cancer and having vaccines that may actually prevent cancer really exciting and novel. So tell us a little bit about how that works. Should everybody get vaccinated? When should they get vaccinated? How? I mean, is this something that you have to get vaccinated multiple times for?
So currently there are two vaccines that prevent infection with HPV. There is Gardasil, which protects against four strains of the virus. It protects against type 6 and 11 that cause 90% of genital warts, and type 16 and 18 that cause 70% of cervical cancers. The bivalent vaccine is called Cervarix, and it protects against infections with type 16 and 18. So the guidelines are very clear that the routine recommendation for vaccination is that boys and girls at ages 11 and 12 get the vaccine. And it is a three-dose series to be given over 6 months. And it is ideal to give the vaccine to very young adolescents because the vaccine can prevent infection with HPV but cannot treat it. So it really needs to be given before people become sexually active. Then we also have catch-up recommendations. So if for some reason an adolescent doesn't get the vaccine at age 11 or 12, they can get the vaccine up to age 26, and they can still receive protection that way.
It should, I think, also be worth pointing out that within the last 10 years or so, we've appreciated that the same viruses also cause a substantial fraction of head and neck cancers, cancers of the tonsils, cancers of the base of the tongue. And so the vaccine, which was developed to prevent cervical cancer, we believe will also prevent head and neck cancer as well.
And that isn't it. Oh, I'm sorry. That is an interesting point, because when the vaccine first came out in 2006, it was only approved and licensed for use in women. And that recommendation has changed. Since 2011, the recommendation is for boys also to receive routine recommendation. And I think part of that was because the vaccine also prevents some anal cancers, but also the head and neck cancers. So the boys currently are lagging much behind the girls in terms of coverage. But it's really important to get the message out that the vaccine does prevent more than just cervical cancer as a way of making sure that more boys get vaccinated.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how we get that message out. I mean, is this something that is being taught in schools? Is this something that, we should be, our family physician should be talking to our youth about? How do we get that message out? Because it sounds like it's a blanket recommendation.
It is. And pediatricians are typically the ones who would give this vaccine to their patients, and they are very well aware of the vaccine, and I'm sure they're doing their best to promote its usage. I think, you know, a couple of barriers have been that it's a relatively new vaccine, and some people tend to be wary of that. And the other thing is that it's a vaccine that protects against a sexually transmitted infection. So many parents think that their children don't need it. So that's another barrier. I'll tell you one barrier is not cost, in the sense that the vaccine is covered by all major health insurance companies, and it's also covered by federal programs for uninsured or underinsured teens. So anybody who wants the vaccine should be able to get it without the issue of cost. Currently, the latest estimates from some national survey data are that only about 50% of adolescent females have gotten at least one dose of the vaccine, and only about a third have received all three doses. So clearly, the uptake rates are suboptimal, and we need to do a lot more work around promoting the vaccine and really understanding what the barriers are. I think those are still empirical questions at this point.
So is it that this virus, you can only get this virus through sexually transmitted routes?
As far as we know, that's how the virus is transmitted, by direct contact with another infected person. However, most people don't know they're infected. And as Linda said, these are very common infections, and it's estimated that the lifetime risk of a woman is about 80% will be infected by one of the cancer-causing types. Most of them don't cause any problem. They go away, but she could still be transmitting the virus to somebody else.
So then I guess the other question is, you know, we've talked a little bit about this vaccine being primarily targeted to people before they become sexually active. But I can imagine that some of our audience may be sitting there and thinking, you know, I'm 40 years old and I'm sexually active and they discover this vaccine now. Is it too late for me to get vaccinated? I'm still sexually active. And gosh, I really don't want to get cervical cancer, head and neck cancer, other forms of cancer.
So there has been research looking at the safety and efficacy of the vaccine in women ages 27 to 45. And in fact, there has been shown to be some benefit to vaccination for those women. It has not been made a routine recommendation, and my understanding is in part because of cost-effectiveness analyses. So the amount of disease that you would prevent in that age group relative to what it would cost to vaccinate that age group makes it not cost-effective from a public health point of view. But certainly a woman, an older woman, someone older the age, over the age of 27, could certainly talk to her provider and have a discussion about that and see what her options may be. I am aware of some older women who have been vaccinated, so I guess that would be considered off-label. But again, it's up to a woman to talk to her provider about her perceived risk and her sense of need for that vaccine. It is safe and effective for women in that age range.
And another point that perhaps is worth reiterating is that this vaccine has been given now tens of millions of doses around the world. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be an extremely safe vaccine. There are no documented severe side effects that have occurred for any of those women who have been vaccinated.
What if you know that you've been infected? What if you know that you have HPV, you're an HPV carrier, you've been told that you have this? Does the vaccine help you at all?
Yes, it can. So again, there are multiple strains of HPV, and there are four strains in the vaccine. So a woman who knows that she had HPV has, maybe she had multiple infections, but possibly she only had one type of virus. And so she could be protected from infection with the other three types with the vaccine. So in fact, and this is very clear too, a previous history of an HPV infection or a previous abnormal pap smear is not a contraindication to getting the vaccine.
So then I guess the question is, it sounds like if you're under the age of 27 and there are these routine guidelines, minimal side effects, great uptake in terms of preventing cervical cancer, preventing warts, preventing head and neck cancer. Everybody should do this, particularly because in that younger population, this is covered by the majority of health plans and by federal programs. Let's now say that you're over 27. One of the issues you pointed out is even if you've had cervical issues and you've gotten HPV, you can still benefit from the virus. But if you're over the age of 27, it may not be covered. Is that right? Because it's now off-label?
That is correct.
So how much does this cost?
It's for the again, as Linda said, it's three shots, and it's about $500 total for the three-shot series, plus or minus a little bit.
So it's expensive.
Okay.
And that is certainly a problem for getting women vaccinated sort of past 26, which is all the more reason why people who would like to be vaccinated should take full advantage of the coverage they have when they're adolescents or young adults and be vaccinated at that time.
Terrific. Well, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute, but please stay tuned to learn more information about HPV and cancer when we return.
There are over 12 million cancer survivors in the U.S. right now, and the numbers keep growing. Completing treatment for cancer is a very exciting milestone, but cancer and its treatment can be a life-changing experience. The return to normal activities and relationships may be difficult, and cancer survivors may face other long-term side effects of cancer, including heart problems, osteoporosis, fertility issues, and an increased risk of second cancers. Resources for cancer survivors are available at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale Cancer Center, to keep cancer survivors well and focused on healthy living. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined today by our guests, Dr. Dan DeMeo and Dr. Nicolai. We're discussing HPV and cancer, and right before the break, Dr. Nicolai was telling us about how we can vaccinate against HPV and really have a significant impact on preventing cancer, which I think is such an exciting area. But maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the data that we have that vaccination really works. I mean, has this been tried in other parts of the world? How much of an impact is there really for us to have if we were to take this and do it on a large scale?
Sure. Well, there has been, in the past year or two, some very exciting, very compelling data coming out from around the world showing early vaccine impact. So clearly, you know, cervical cancer takes decades to develop after infection. So we don't expect to see declines in cervical cancer in this time frame because the vaccine's only been out for about 7 years. But we are already seeing dramatic declines in genital warts and in cervical infections. And in particular, in places like Australia and the UK, the United Kingdom, where they've had very proactive vaccination programs. They basically do school-based vaccination programs for 11 and 12-year-olds, and they've achieved very high coverage rates. And in those settings, the data coming out, you know, the articles are titled things like the near disappearance of genital warts. I mean, they really are declining by 90%. We're also seeing some evidence in the U.S. In the U.S., we've seen some declines in genital warts and some declines in cervical infections. A very nice study came out from Cincinnati recently showing about a two-thirds decline in cervical infections in women who'd been vaccinated, from about 30% down to 10%. So I am very encouraged that we are already seeing pretty dramatic effects. And again, if we can get those vaccination coverage rates up even higher, we can do even more.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the headline that says the near disappearance of cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dan, you know, we see a lot of cancers in the developing world as well. And something that I had read recently that our audience may not be aware of, but cancer is really becoming a significant issue in the developing world with more cases than malaria and AIDS combined. Talk to us a little bit about vaccines in the developing world. Are they seeing an impact? Are they available there? And what impact are they having there?
Well, you're correct that most virally induced cancers take place in the developing world. About 80% of all liver cancer, cervical cancer, and so forth, it's primarily a problem, or more major problem, in Africa, parts of Latin America, parts of Asia, much more so than in this country. And that's because, for cervical cancer, we have these effective pap smear screening programs, which have really had a major impact on the rate of cervical cancer. But the problem is that for HPV vaccination, it is not distributed widely in the developing world yet because of its cost. And there's a lot of interest in hopefully bringing the cost down or changing the formulation so it's cheaper so that more people can benefit from it. But right now, the vaccine is being distributed widely really only in the developed world. Now, hepatitis vaccine, hepatitis virus, hepatitis B virus, which is one of several types of hepatitis virus, there's a vaccine that's been around for 20 or 30 years. And now it is available quite cheaply, and the majority of children in the world are vaccinated. So that's really a tremendous step forward. And we are also seeing drops in liver cancer because of hepatitis B vaccination.
So one of the things you had mentioned was with reference to pap smears, and I just wanted to come back to this concept. So if Linda, you know, you get vaccinated, does that mean that now you've prevented getting cancer? Can you still get cancer even if you've been vaccinated?
Yes, you can. And one thing to be very clear about is that screening guidelines for cervical cancer have not changed for women who've been vaccinated. So whether you've been vaccinated or not, no matter how many doses you've gotten, no matter when you got, no matter what your vaccination status is, all women need to undergo cervical cancer screening the same way. And the reason for that is because, again, there are, you know, multiple types of HPV in the vaccine, types 16 and 18, but there are 15 other HPV types that cause the remaining 30% of cancers. So women are not protected against some types that that cause a smaller number, a smaller percentage of cancers. So routine screening remains the same for women who have been vaccinated. And it's interesting, that also just made me realize that, so the vaccine we have now protects against type 16 and 18. There is another vaccine that's in clinical trials right now. It's a non-avalent vaccine that protects against 9 different types of HPV that are thought to cause about 90% of cervical cancers. So we expect those results to come out soon, and that would be an exciting development. But even for that, again, routine cervical cancer screening, it should remain the same.
So the idea is get vaccinated and keep getting screened, but with that, your rate of getting cancer will go down. So hopefully most of those screens will come back and say, congratulations, you're negative.
Exactly.
And that will also, those women with those positive, or those favorable results won't need any further testing until their next pap smear. So a lot of follow-up testing we do now to look at lesions will no longer be necessary because those lesions don't exist.
Right. You know, Dan, one of the things I wanted to come back to you and talk a little bit about, we opened the show talking about viruses and cancer, and I was impressed by how many cancers are caused by viruses. And you mentioned the hepatitis B vaccine and how that's actually had an effect in lowering the rates of liver cancer. Are there other success stories with other kinds of cancer and other kinds of vaccines in the head and neck or in other parts of the body that vaccines have been helpful?
Well, as I said, we expect that the HPV vaccine, we believe, will prevent cervical cancer, will prevent some forms of anal cancer, vulvar cancer, penile cancer, and some head and neck cancers. Hepatitis B vaccine is also very effective, will prevent liver cancer. We don't yet have vaccines for the other human tumor viruses, and there are now 7 viruses known to cause cancer in people, and people are working hard to try and develop those vaccines. But it's important to realize that most people infected by these viruses will never get cancer. So, for example, I mentioned 80% of women will get HPV infection. The vast majority will get better without developing cancer. Even without the vaccine, most of them will get better. Epstein-Barr virus is a virus that infects virtually everybody on Earth, can cause cancer in a rare number, low number of people. There's no vaccine yet, but people are trying to develop a vaccine. And then HIV is an indirect cause of cancer because it causes immunosuppression. People obviously are working on vaccines for HIV. We don't have them yet, but we have very effective antivirals. So these antiviral therapies, medicines, will ultimately also reduce the risk of cancer in those patients.
So is Epstein-Barr virus the same virus that causes mono?
Yes. So the Epstein-Barr virus causes mononucleosis and also causes certain lymphomas and some Hodgkin's disease and possibly some stomach cancer. Most people, though, have a mild infection, no worse than mono, and sometimes they don't even know they're infected. As I said, about 90% or more of people, everybody on Earth has been affected by this virus.
So if you get mono, should you be scared that you're going to get cancer?
No, absolutely not. It's as I said, almost everybody gets this virus. Mm-hmm. And so you should just assume you're infected with Epstein-Barr virus.
Right. And it's similar with HPV, where 80 million people in the United States are infected with HPV at any point in time, 80 million. About 12,000 women will develop cervical cancer every year, which is 12,000 too many. But when you think about the 80 million people who were infected, 80 million, and then the 12,000 who get cancer, you can see that the vast, vast majority of people either clear HPV infections on their own, they may have no symptoms, They may not even know they're infected, and they will clear the infection. And for the smaller number of women who don't clear the infection and go on and develop abnormalities in the cervix, those are, if they are detected through routine screening, those are easily treated with safe treatments, procedures, outpatient procedures that remove the infected part of the cervix. So, yes, the good news is that the vast, vast majority of people who are infected will not go on and develop cancer.
The other good news is that it takes a long time to get the cancer. So if you are infected and are unfortunate enough to develop cancer, that's typically 20 years or more after the infection. A lot of time to have your pap smear screening programs and to, mm-hmm. and to catch it at an early stage. And as Linda said, mm-hmm. it is quite treatable and curable if caught at an early mm-hmm. stage.
So then, you know, I would bet you that there's going to be a person or two in our audience who is sitting here and thinking in their contrarian way and saying, you know, you've got 80 million people who have this virus. Only 12,000 of them are going to go on to get cancer. Why on earth would we vaccinate the 80 million? Why not just have them screened and then deal with the precancerous cells when they develop?
Well, again, the cancer and the precancerous cells are some of the outcomes from an HPV infection, but not all of the outcomes. So again, genital warts can be prevented. Genital warts are common. 1 million people every year get genital warts in the U.S. Those can be prevented with the vaccine. And even the women who don't clear the infection and they may have, you know, some disease progression that can be detected and treated, that still is something to be avoided, right? Because it involves multiple healthcare visits, multiple exams, multiple pap smears, biopsies, a lot of anxiety about health and difficulty in relationships. So preventing cancer is clearly the gold standard and the ultimate goal, but there is a lot of other disease, other stages in the natural history that would be great to be avoided.
So you bring up a great point, which really speaks to the current era that we're in, right, with healthcare costs being what they are. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the cost effectiveness of massive vaccination programs like this?
Well, it has been – people have done those sort of calculations. And it's been concluded that just purely on economic grounds that the cost of complete vaccination or complete enough that it will have a major impact is several-fold lower than the cost of our current screening and treatment procedures. So not even taking into account the emotional stress of having a positive test and the time that it takes to get it taken care of, just on purely – financial reasons, it's a win situation.
So then the question, I guess, being the contrarian, right, might be, well, you know, so I get that. That's great. Let's vaccinate people. It's a cost-effective strategy, given that the majority of people then would be prevented from getting this. Does it make sense then to extend the time period between pap smears? So, for example, if you're vaccinated, instead of getting your pap smear, you know, every X number of years, you can make it every 2X. Has that been talked about or thought about?
Yes, it's been thought about and talked about a lot, but nothing has changed, again, for the screening recommendations for women depending on their vaccination status. The current guidelines are to begin screening for cervical cancer with the pap smear at age 21 mm-hmm. and be screened every 3 years. At age 30, there is an option for women who have both a pap smear and they are co-tested with an HPV test that if those are both normal, they can go every 5 years. So the pap smear looks for abnormal cells and the HPV test actually looks for the presence of the virus. So there is this new testing technology that can be used for women over 30, but again, it does not depend on vaccination status. That may change, but it has not yet.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that we're all hopeful that as more and more women get vaccinated, as more and more men get vaccinated, that we'll be able to change the interval between pap smears. But we're not there yet. The recommendations are the same. But I think my prediction is that will change sometime in the future.
Dr. Dan DeMeo is Waldemar von Zedwitz Professor of Genetics and Professor of Molecular Biophysics and Biochemistry and of Therapeutic Radiology. He's also Scientific Director and Deputy Director of the Yale Cancer Center. Dr. Linda Nicolai is Associate Professor of Epidemiology and Microbial Diseases and Director of the HPV Impact Project in the Emerging Infections Program. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.